You'll find children's Christmas books, Reformation 500 gifts, devotional resources, and more in Concordia Publishing House's Christmas catalog. They'll send it to you for free. Call 1-800-325-3040 or view it online at issuesetc.org. Place an order for $79 or more, and CPH will send you three Christmas ornaments for free. Concordia Publishing House's Christmas catalog, issuesetc.org or 1-800-325-3040.
The original victims were struck by the car at approximately 9:52 this morning. The officer encountered the individual by 9:53, and the subject was neutralized by 9:53.
You frankly took a piece out of everybody here at our beautiful Ohio State University that this could have happened here. But we are a strong, tough, resilient community.
He was a nice guy. I mean, always spoke when spoken to. Never had any kind of mean tendencies towards, you know, his demeanor. My children, they go to school with, I believe, his youngest sister.
That's Ohio State University President Michael Drake, Ohio Governor John Kasich, and Luann Carnahan. Next door neighbor of the suspect in the Ohio State University attack. Is there a connection between the man's religion and the attack that he carried out yesterday? He is a Muslim. Now people are digging into his Facebook post and seeing that there was some discontent, to say the least, about how Muslims were treated. There was an article in the student newspaper where he talked about being misrepresented as a Muslim. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 29th of November. We're going to be talking about Islam and the Ohio State University attacker with Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch. A little bit later, we're going to be spending some time with Tom Egger, assistant professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. On this day, the church is remembering an Old Testament figure. Also, he could be called a prophet, Noah. He's famous as the one man, along with his family, who was saved in the great universal flood. We'll talk about all of that a little bit later in this hour. Joining us to talk about Islam and the Ohio State University attacker, Robert Spencer. He's a regular guest. He's director of Jihad Watch, and he's author of several books on Islam, including The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS and his latest publication, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. Robert, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always good to be here. Thanks, Todd.
Talking about this Ohio State University student who, with both his car and a knife, attacked so many others yesterday. Some might say, look, he just so happens to be a Muslim, and he's a lone wolf. He probably disturbed. No reason to call this an act of terrorism or even to suggest that it's connected to larger terrorist organizations. How do you respond?
In the first place, just a few days ago, the Islamic State, ISIS, reaffirmed its call for Muslims in the United States to carry out what they specifically said were lone wolf attacks. That is, individual Muslims who don't have any institutional tie or obvious contact with jihadis going off and waging jihad. Now, this man, Abdul Artan, is on Facebook saying, by Allah, I am willing to kill a billion infidels. And that's exactly in line, of course, with the Islamic State's call. And also, his MO was exactly in line with an earlier Islamic State call in September 2014, when they first called for attacks on American civilians. They said specifically, run over them with your car, stab them with a knife, which is exactly what he did.
So that lends credibility to those who might say that there's influence here. Let's talk a little bit about the way the narrative is being portrayed in some of the media, which is, well, of course he lashed out. He was a Muslim in America, and Muslims in America are a discriminated class. He felt the pressure of that, and he lashed out for reasons unrelated to Islam per se.
Well, here again, the statement that he left on Facebook, where he also mentioned lone wolf attacks, was all Islamic. It was all about Islam and attacks on Muslims, supposed grievances that he had as on the basis of alleged atrocities committed by American troops abroad in Muslim countries. And there wasn't anything else in it. And so when he's saying that he's going to avenge Muslims, and defend Islam, then that seems to be what he was trying to do. The idea that these people, that his connection to Islam or jihad is only tangential and incidental, is not borne out by the facts. The statements that he made are very clear, and what's more, they are in line with the whole ISIS imperative.
There's also a statement that he made in a student newspaper earlier where he says, "I'm a Muslim. It's not what the media portrays me to be. People look at me, a Muslim praying. I don't know what they're going to think. What's going to happen?" People are appealing to this, saying, well, at one point, he was not only feeling discriminated, but he gave no indication of any hostility. What are your thoughts?
Well, see, I think it's rather astonishing that that's spreading around right now, Todd, because if you look at the whole statement, he says he was afraid to pray in public because of how the media portrays Muslims. But he went ahead and prayed in public, and nothing happened. And so it's really not a story about how terrible Americans are to him. It's a story about how he's afraid that Americans are going to be terrible to him. But there isn't any, that doesn't turn out to be any foundation for the idea. And what's more, we know from the FBI's hate crime statistics that hate crimes against Muslims are actually much less common than hate crimes against Jews. The idea that Muslims are discriminated against or hated in the United States is simply not borne out by the facts. This man was welcomed into the United States as a refugee. He was no doubt given aid to go to college, and he had nothing to be upset about. The idea that the jihad imperative is all based on what we do and that we have to be nice to Muslims because then they won't go jihad, in the first place, it's condescending to the Muslims themselves, you know, acting as if they can only react to what we do, and so we have to be nice, and that will end the jihad. The idea that they might be acting from beliefs that are embedded within their own religion doesn't ever seem to enter in. And yet that's what Artan's statements make very clear, that he's acting upon from beginning to end.
Does it also, that notion that we kind of brought this on ourselves by how poorly we've dealt with Muslims or here domestically or with Muslim nations in terms of our geopolitical situation, does it also ignore both the short-term history of this thing and the long-term history of this thing, how Muslim nations, both modern and ancient, have positioned themselves, has been really remarkably consistent, hasn't it?
Yeah, and that's a very good and important point. The great Islamic empires of the past were waging jihad against non-Muslims when those non-Muslims didn't do anything to them and they had no grievances whatsoever. The early Muslim conquests of the 7th century of North Africa and the Middle East, those were all Christian lands. Those Christians hadn't done a thing to the Muslims, and they were conquered and Islamized. And Islam has spread through conquest wherever it's gone, except in Southeast Asia. And there have never been any kind of large-scale provocations or grievances that they actually had. This grievance propaganda is actually a jihad recruiting tool to make Muslims like Abdul Artan think that the only thing they can do to defend Muslims against these rapacious infidels is take up arms. But there's never been any substance to it.
Do we need a more carefully crafted definition of terrorism? Because when I say that word, I think it's probably safe to assume that most people think suicide bomber, truck bomber. They think large scale. They think coordinated attacks like those that took place in France. They think of things that are carefully planned and executed, like the 9/11 attacks. Do we need a finer definition, especially in terms of scope and scale of terrorism?
Todd, I'll tell you, I don't think the problem is the definition of terrorism so much as the unwillingness of the Obama administration and law enforcement and government officials in general to name jihad as the problem. Jihad is the motivating ideology, the Islamic idea of jihad behind all the jihad terror attacks. And yet it's the official policy of the Obama administration to ignore and deny that. Their whole counter-terror approach is called countering violent extremism. It never mentions Islam or jihad. You can't defeat an enemy you don't understand, much less one you refuse to understand, and that's the situation we're in.
And your point there, Robert, is that the Muslim who has dedicated himself either corporately or individually to jihad, this is how he thinks of his enterprise.
Yeah, and we need to understand that. It might be entirely unjustified on Islamic grounds. It might be that they really have twisted and hijacked the religion of peace. I don't think that's the case, but even if you grant that, you still have to understand their twisted and hijacked version of Islam in order to understand how to counter them, what they might do, what they hold important, what they hold unimportant, and so on. And that can only be done by studying their ideology, which is the one thing the United States government refuses to do.
What would that take? How would you offer a quick several-minute primer on the ideology, how it relates to what we have been witnessing for, well, really, for probably 50 years here in the United States?
Well, the thing is that I think that the law enforcement officials, the FBI, intel officials, they need to study Islam. They need to study the Quran and the life of Muhammad. This is not because Muslims are all terrorists or all this nonsense that people claim that it would be behind that, but it is to understand the ideology, the motivating ideology of those who have vowed to destroy us. They always reference what they do on the basis of the Islamic religion, just like Abdul Artan did. So we have to understand the Islamic religion in order to counter them effectively.
What do you make of the term radicalized? Because it's often used to say, here is a otherwise peaceful Muslim young man in this Ohio State student who somehow fell in with the wrong crowd. What do you make of that?
Well, the thing about it is that the Quran and the life of Muhammad are full of exhortations to violence. And those things are normative. You know, Muhammad is the supreme example of conduct for Muslims. And so if Muhammad fought wars against unbelievers and subjugated them under the rule of the Muslims, and he did, then there are Muslims who believe that that is their divine responsibility. The Quran says, kill them wherever you find them. This is something that Muslims are going to take seriously. We have to understand that for a Muslim to be radicalized, all he needs to do is read and heed the Quran and Sunnah. And this is a very dangerous problem that has to be addressed, that we need to call upon the Muslims in the United States to institute programs to teach against the understanding of Islam that is offered by Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And it's very telling that no such programs exist in mosques today.
What insight can we gain from understanding his country of origin, from looking at the situation vis-a-vis Islam and Somalia?
Well, you know, Somalia and Pakistan, where he lived before he came to the United States, are both hotbeds of jihad activity. So this is a young man who almost certainly grew up around jihadis and around people who thought jihadis were great heroes. And this is just what Donald Trump has said, that we need to have a moratorium on immigration from countries with a high incidence of jihad activity. Well, that's Pakistan and Somalia to a T. If he had been president now and that had been implemented, Abdul Artan would never have come to the United States.
He wrote in a Facebook post that if Muhammad were alive today, he would be a terrorist. Is that young man right?
Well, sure. Muhammad said, I've been made victorious through terror. The Quran says, chapter 8, verse 60, to strike terror in the enemies of Allah. And so to be a terrorist is something that any jihad terrorist can point to the Quran and the example of Muhammad to justify what he's doing.
How do we reasonably watch out for this kind of stuff? Because for everyone on Ohio State campus, for every Muslim student, not all will get in their cars or wield knives against their fellow students. How do we at that level and at the kind of the municipal level guard against this?
We have to, in the first place, understand where it's coming from. And we need to have a national conversation about the mosques, about monitoring the mosques, about instituting those programs I mentioned, and calling upon the people in the mosques to actually back up their condemnations of Al-Qaeda and ISIS with real action, and to understand that seditious preaching will be treated as such. And we need to know what's being taught in these mosques.
Will seditious preaching in the mosque always sound like, will it sound like, run over them with your car?
No. Sometimes it will be very subtle and based on Quranic teaching. And that's why people who are monitoring the mosques need to know about Islam.
How does that monitoring take place? This is the kind of specifics that I think people find particularly thorny. How is that done?
Well, we need to know what's being preached. And so if there's somebody in the mosque, if the sermons are recorded, it's probably the easiest way. The government of Turkey, when Turkey was still secular, as it still technically is, but it's rapidly on the way out, re-Islamizing, but at the high point of secular Turkey, no imam was able to preach in the mosque what he wanted. He had to get the sermon from the Ministry of Religion and preach that. And the sermons from the Ministry of Religion only spoke about Islam in a religious sense and never dealt with the political aspect. Now, I'm not saying that the government needs to start telling the mosques what to preach particularly, but needs to understand that we have American law, and where Sharia conflicts with American law, it should not be preached in the United States.
And your response to those who would raise red flags regarding religious liberty in that sense?
There's religious liberty, and religious liberty is based on the First Amendment of the Constitution. The Constitution is not a suicide pact, and the First Amendment is not some sort of a free pass for sedition. The freedom of speech ends where breaking the law begins. And where sedition begins, that is not something that was ever intended to be protected, free speech. The idea that the founding fathers put some sort of a time bomb in the Constitution or in the Bill of Rights that allows people to commit treason or subversion on the basis of their freedom of religion is there's just no basis for that whatsoever. The whole idea of the Constitution is to preserve and protect the United States, not to allow it to be destroyed from within.
Couldn't actions like this be misused against nonviolent religions like Christianity?
If you have that kind of an unscrupulous government. And the procedures upon which these kinds of things would be based would have to be worked out very carefully in law. We saw how this kind of thing can happen with the RICO statutes that were originally constructed in order to fight mafiosi and then ended up being used against pro-lifers. And that kind of thing has to be guarded against in the same way. But the idea that a law might be abused is not an argument that it should not be used at all. There's a real problem that needs to be addressed.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS and his latest publication, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. You'll find links to these books and to Jihad Watch at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Robert, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Folks, if you appreciate Issues Etc., your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible donation. With 5 weeks left in the year, we're $105,000 short of expenses, and you can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also make a financial gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. If you have the LPR mobile app, you also can give by just clicking the Give tab. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2016. When we come back, we're going to be remembering Noah. He's remembered on this 29th day of November. Is he a prophet? When it says that he found favor with God, does that mean that he was the only believer left on earth? Does it mean he was sinless? We'll answer those questions after this.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Christians, young and old, are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldusa.org. worldusa.org.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.